Time in Barbados in the Eastern Caribbean is 12 minutes after 11 o'clock. You're listening to VOB 92.9 FM. This is Down to Brass Tacks 4341790. Wishing my colleague Dennis Johnson all the best, and he's praying that Dennis will be fit and in fine form to continue with Down to Brass Tacks as soon as possible. So in the interim, until we get a more qualified and skilled batsman in the middle, I was in the pavilion there just watching the match and totally impressed by the proceedings. And then I was told that I might have to put on some pads and come and bat. But if you've seen my performance with the Starcom Conquering Lions, and we've been unbeaten for so long, you'll know that my one not out was made in fine Sir Carl Hooper-esque style. So give us a call, 4341790. It's a rare occasion that I get the opportunity to be in this seat, and it usually is for a temporary time. I think the little Shakespeare I recall would have been Henry IV, Part One, where it was said, if all the days of the year were playing holidays, to sport would be as tedious as to work, but when they seldom come, they wished for come, and nothing pleaseth more than rare accidents. So this is a rare accident. Be sure to give me a buzz and we can speak about the issues as they affect you. And you do get the opportunity to WhatsApp as well. That's 266-IVOB. I would have been on air a couple of days ago on VOB 92.9 FM when we had the tragedy which occurred at Bishop's Court Hill involving the loss of life of a fellow member of the Nation Starcom team and a member of the AMB contracting firm as well. And as I'm here for the first time in a announcing or presenter capacity, I just wish to extend my condolences and sympathy to the families and indeed to the family of the elderly lady who lost her life tragically too at the Oystins fishing complex. I believe it's the Barinda Dutz Cox Complex, I think that's the official name, after one of the legendary and renowned members of the fisher folk community in Oystins. Looking at the Nation newspaper, for those who wouldn't have had the opportunity, remember 4341790, love to hear how you think about the stage of Barbados relative to COVID-19 treatment and handling. Of course, mid-March, very sudden emergence and impact on Barbados, and the risks managed, mitigated, and conditions in effect which were unprecedented. The inability to travel freely, the restrictions in being able to tend to basic needs such as shopping for food and household items, the restriction on alcohol for a period, the necessity to work from home and to utilize technology such as Zoom, which prior to the restrictions was not a buzzword. The closest that you got to hearing Zoom prior to the introduction of COVID-19 would have been a hit song by the Commodores or a hit song in 1982 by Fat Larry's band, or Zooming, as in zooming on a picture. But that certainly has become a way of life. And most businesses have changed the manner in which, coming out of the shutdown and the lockdown, we meet, greet, even family members, that has changed. But I will tell you that with the opening of the country last week, being the outgoing person that I am, I've been to a number of venues, and it's a familiar type scene at these venues versus what people would have expected coming out of COVID-19. It's the nature of people when you congregate in an area for entertainment, particularly certain types of entertainment where there may be a bit more hype, a bit more action, as they say, and something more reserved, like a concert with a particular type of artiste, you may expect the chairs being placed in certain areas according to a revised floor plan, but in a club, you're hardly going to see that. So it's going to be interesting as more time goes by, especially with the curfew restriction moving from 10 p.m. on Friday, 10 p.m. on Saturday, and 10 p.m. on Sunday. When that restriction is lifted, we will witness a total response, an adequate response that we can measure relative to how the reaction will be of partygoers and fetgoers. Remember, 4341790, down to brass tacks. We're scheduled to be here until 2 o'clock. I can tell you that Mr. Peter Wickham is on his way. So you've got a real batsman coming in, a man that scored double hundred. He can play 20-20, 50 over, and test cricket. And I'm sure he'll be coming in for a cameo. After all, at least 25% of the time allotted for the innings has gone. And I don't think he'll need much time to get his eye in. He'll be playing shots square. He'll be driving past the bowler, and he'll be pulling through mid-wicket with consummate ease. And some of these deliveries that you wish to trick him with, he'll be reading the ball. He'll be looking at your hand and recognizing where the ball will be going and leaving them well alone. So what we need to do is to hear from you. And we also have the opportunity to liaise with you via WhatsApp. And we do have a number of WhatsApp messages. Most of them are wishing Dennis well. And we see them. Mr. Johnson wishing you well. Best wishes to Dennis. Sorry you had to leave today. Be well. Praying for your throat. These are all different messages. These are not the same message. Dennis is well loved. So recognize, Dennis, that you have the entire brass tacks community on your side. Now, I do have a daughter who's sitting 11 plus this year, and she's a beautiful young lady. Of course, I would say so, I'm her father. And the fact that she's good looking is entirely due to her mother and nothing to do with me whatsoever. But she enjoyed the time away from school physically because it was a new experience, the Zoom meetings, the physical education aspect of it at home. But there's nothing like children seeing their friends. And one of the fears people had was, well, they're going to be so excited and they're not going to be able to keep their distance. But I think we have to give our children more credit than that. I think those are the fears that we have as adults and parents. But from what I see where she goes to school, they've been doing all the necessary things. And the school has been rotating the attendance of two groups. So for weeks 1 and 3, group 1 would go on certain days, and then there would be days at home, and then there would be a day where they'll be doing assignments, and then same thing for group 2 going on the other days. There was a common day, which was a testing day, and that would happen for 4 weeks leading up to the exam. And I believe that from talking to her and assessing what she's doing, that she'll be ready. Remember the preparation for the common entrance examination for students who were sitting in 2020 did not begin in March. It would have essentially begun from, I guess, class 2. But dependent upon what you have your children do outside of what the school offers, then that child could be even more prepared by the time the exam comes around. And it's been a challenging period, but I believe that our authorities and everybody involved, notwithstanding the concerns that certain groups would have, and that includes teachers, parents, administrators, and naturally all those associated with health who are witnessing this completion of the education program at a critical stage for these young persons. I think everybody wants the best. Nobody's looking to be mightier than anybody else or exert more authority or power. That doesn't count. The children count the most. the children will always count the most. And we need to bear this in mind with every decision that we make concerning the activity. And that includes cultural things. Things such as the debate relative to Lord Nelson. There are people who believe that by addressing what history means now, as opposed to what it meant before, that there is a danger in there. But if you look at societies, things change over centuries, over half a century, 2 decades, or a decade. And you're hearing me and thinking, well, Ronnie's on both sides. He has a white German mum, 5'2", totally white, from Schwalmtal, in the Black Forest, in Germany. He himself was born in Germany. But he also has a black dad, 6'3", usually around 200 pounds, Bush Hall, Goodland, and he's lived in England, Germany, and Barbados, and has seen both sides of prejudice, both sides of racism, all the words, the actions, the perceptions. And Barbados is different from Germany, is different from England. But what about Nelson? I believe he should be moved. I don't think you should speak publicly and sound confusing on it if you're going to make a position. Especially if you're in a position of authority, be very clear. If you're in a position where people expect to hear from the person who holds that office, speaking in the capacity of having that office, then that's not the time for your personal opinion. Speak to what you know has been the case when this matter has been discussed before. And as the holder of any position related to the issue, speak in that capacity. So where does Nelson go? Museum for me is a possibility. The end of the pier, where the Barbados Defence Force used to be, possibly looking out. I think there's merit in that. Still be in Bridgetown, but certainly not a hero. Not to me, and I think to the majority of Barbadians. Not a hero, shouldn't be in Hero Square. So the real issue is, where should Nelson be? I'm sure there are people that want to dump Nelson in the sea. That's understandable. There's that type of feeling out there, that type of anger, especially when one recalls what our ancestors went through. And I speak from my perspective as African ancestors. But we have to look at 2020 and beyond and be sure that in as much as it depends on us who live here in Barbados, that we live in such a way that we build and create wealth for the generation that we are responsible for and the generations to come. We need more discussions like that. When you look at the background, the social background of economic development in Barbados, it is clear that slavery's legacy and heritage would have created different foundations, platforms, and springboards for different sectors of the society. Success is not limited, should not be limited to color. Should be diligence, should be hard work, it should be opportunity to make a contribution and have access to all the things that allow for a fair chance. But life is seldom fair. So fairness, justice and equality are things that we have to strive for. And justice is important. People must see justice as being done and justice seen to be done. And if you think it was an injustice for me to be the last resort this morning and sit in this chair with you, well, justice is about to be done because Peter is here. And I would have done enough as a night watchman at 11:27 in the morning to allow for the return of one of the batting giants to the crease. And I would like to welcome Peter. Peter, welcome. And the show is yours. And once again, get well, Dennis. And thank you for surviving the past 12, 10 or 15 minutes in which you had to suffer with yours truly at the crease. The real batsman is here, Peter Wickham. Good morning.
Good morning and welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. And I want to thank Ronnie for, he calls himself a night watchman, but I feel that in the period that he was there, he did bowl a few bowls, maybe not sixes and fours, but he could still poke a single or two, which is, I guess, the job of a night watchman. But certainly want to thank Ronnie for standing in and presenting that monologue, which touched on several topical issues. And I'm sure that you are happy to have heard from him. He's certainly not a voice that you hear very frequently on the program. Mine certainly is one that you probably hear more. So the name is Peter Wickham, if you didn't realize it yet. I will be with you until 2 p.m. I'm understanding that Dennis is a bit under the weather, and certainly we want to wish Dennis well. I think you are all familiar with the situation where Dennis is concerned. I'm absolutely sure that this time tomorrow he'll probably be back up and running as normal. So certainly we want to wish Dennis well. I understand that when he went off the program, he was having a conversation with the Trinidadian lady. I certainly do not want to suggest that there was any curious relationship between the conversation he was having with the Trinidadian lady and him not being in a position to continue the program. That would, of course, be the kind of speculation that we are not allowed to make. But I just found that a bit curious. But nonetheless, I've been given the opportunity to sit with you for the next hour plus. And I want to thank you. The producer is just making the switch to ensure that I can be comfortably accommodated and to ensure that he makes all of his technical changes to facilitate my presence in the chair. So in the meantime, I can just remind you that our call numbers are 434-1790, and you can email me at peter.w.wickham@gmail.com. You can also WhatsApp 266-IVOB. That would be the WhatsApp chat that you can use, and we can interact on that chat. Certainly since the last time I was here, we had more drama in Georgetown, Guyana, a situation where the appeal court in Guyana has issued a judgment. I believe that would have been done after I left on Monday. Indeed, as I was leaving, Justice Ritchie had just completed his comment, and he said that he thought that the court had no jurisdiction in the matter. The other two justices subsequently gave their opinion, and they argued that they had jurisdiction and indeed offered clarification regarding the meaning of valid votes. That has since caused some level of dispute because we had a declaration by Mr. Mingo, who is the chief elections officer, Mr. Lowenfield. I remember which one is the case, because the two of them I get mixed up. One is for Region 4 and one is the CEO. So we had a declaration from the CEO saying that there were valid votes removed or invalid votes removed. And he has found, with the removal of these 115,000 invalid votes, that the new count shows an APNU victory. This has caught the ire of no less a person than Chairman of CARICOM, Prime Minister Mia Motley. I have to tell you that I thought it was bizarre, odd, and quite disturbing that a single individual, could feel that he had the power unilaterally to disenfranchise over 100,000 people. And he could reject 100,000 votes that other people have counted and certified and said were valid. But nonetheless, this was the power that he took unto himself, and he made that decision. So sadly, we had that situation where it required an intervention from several places. There have been controversy in Georgetown, of course, the APNU supporters, all of whom loved Prime Minister Motley. Indeed, you would recall that Prime Minister Motley was given the second highest honor in Guyana, and she was the apple of the eye of the APNU government, sat next to President Granger through thick and thin. And now all of a sudden, we are told that she has overstepped, that she doesn't recognize the sovereignty of Guyana, and so on. Apart from having no difficulty with the substance of what Prime Minister Motley said, apart from having also had no difficulty with the substance of what was said by her incoming chairman, which is Dr. Ralph Gonzalez, which was just recently, the substance of the issue for me in terms of those two having the opportunity to offer opinions is perfectly fine. I don't have a difficulty where that is concerned. I think that we live in a regional community, and a regional community in which we need from time to time to be our brothers and sisters keeper. And that is what CARICOM is about. CARICOM is a community where we are all called upon to offer views and opinions and to support each other along the way. I think that what CARICOM is doing here is offering support to the people of Georgetown, Guyana, and I think that is absolutely important that they do so. So I don't have a difficulty with it, and I appreciate that the persons who are perhaps supportive of the APNU seem to have a difficulty with what they see as interference. You know, my thing is, in a regional community, a family is here to help the family out, and I think that if we are a family, we need to do that. So she has offered her opinion. We are told the matter now goes to the Caribbean Court of Justice. The Caribbean Court of Justice sits in Trinidad and Tobago. They have issued an injunction. They will determine whether they have jurisdiction in that matter, and then they will deal with the slightly more substantive matter of an interpretation of valid votes, which is what I'm understanding that they will do. They have a meeting today, what they call case management, in which the lawyers will present their arguments. Well, they present their approaches, and they will be given certain times and so on within which to present their arguments. So today we should have an idea of when the case will be heard in full, and then finally when the judgment is likely to be given. So those are the kinds of situations that we are expecting today. We should expect an announcement regarding whether that will happen. In the meantime, however, my hope is that GCOM will come to its senses. My hope is that someone can prevail on Mr. Lowenfield and Mr. Mingo to produce a document that does not disenfranchise these voters. If the Chief Elections Commission were to issue a declaration consistent with the statement of recount, my strong view is that they would, all of this legal issue would go away. And I suspect that one of the first thing that their lordships will do when the parties sit is encourage an amicable solution that would require the case not to proceed. Now, my sense is that that is possible. The problem, of course, is that the problem, of course, is that it would require a declaration from the Chief Elections Officer, and one believes the Chief Elections Officer will not be in a position to offer such. Okay, we're going to have to take a break. We're having some technical challenges, as you must have realized by now, and we're going to try and see if we can resolve those so we can restart the program. Down to Brass Tacks. We seem to be having problems from all directions this morning. We're having some issues with our telephone. My understanding is that the issue is not an internal one. We are just trying to make contact with our service providers to see how we can sort that matter out. The plan, as I understand it, is that we're going to continue until the regional roundup, which will be with us in a few minutes. We're going to persist trying to get the issues with the phone sorted out. If we are unable to do so, the program may unfortunately have to come to a premature ending. Needless to say, I am anxious to chat with you about all manner of things. I wanted to go through some of the WhatsApp messages that are here for our response. And the first one said, "Peter, you are being naughty. The Trinidadian lady got cut off. He had finished talking to the Trinidadian lady, start telling lies on air." I have to admit, I wasn't listening myself. So I received the information from someone else. So I just thought that there was a convenience between the call and the fact that he was talking to her and the fact that he was unwell. I have another WhatsApp messages here. Peter, good to hear you. One question. The Ghanaian election fiasco has been going on for a long time. Why only you decide to discuss it? Further, don't you realize that there are individuals who may be hurting to a point of depression who would like not to be reminded or hear you speak that way, and it will add to their depression? You may not know everything, so I'm begging you, stay with your other topics and leave that one alone. I know what I'm saying. You will be the cause for persons to increase in their depression. Peter, the people of Guyana have their own decision. I believe you have important issues in Barbados that require your attention. As I said before to you, which you have not read, leave Guyana people to the people. We have to live through the fiasco and onwards. They have to live through the punishment, no matter who controls, only more than others. There are more murders of black youths, 400 in 20 years. Well, this is a pretty charged email, and while this is probably one of the first occasions that I have heard people speak of Prime Minister Motley and ask her to quote-unquote mind her own business in terms of regional affairs, it's a regular thing for me. As I do my work up and down these 14 islands of the Caribbean, if people like what I'm saying, they say, you know, it's good to have the involvement of a regional analyst. If people dislike what I'm saying, they tell me, mind my own business, keep out of Guyana's business. And look, I'll say this to you, and I've said it to other people. I have never met President Jagdeo. I've never met the individual. I was in a cafe in Guyana once, and he came in with his bodyguards. I was sitting on one side of the room. He was sitting on another side of the room. I acknowledged his presence, and that was that. I have never had a conversation with him. This perception that I have this overwhelming bias towards him and the Indo community that people feel that he represents is something that I continue to find disturbing. It doesn't work that way. I'm a regional analyst. I see my responsibility and my role as one to analyze and interpret the politics of this region without fear or favor. I'm also a political consultant, but that's another matter. And in this regard, I have commented on the politics of Guyana for the last 20 years I've been in this business, and I will continue to do so. I appreciate that the outcome of the election will cause distress to some people who believe that they have lost. What I have found in terms of Caribbean politics is that whenever you have an election, somebody can win and somebody can lose. And the person that loses invariably vilifies individuals like me who may have spoken against them, or they see us speaking against them. The person who wins is happy. And that is the nature of politics. So Guyana is not special in that regard. St. Kitts and Nevis. And it was interesting in St. Kitts and Nevis that some of the same Labour supporters that were happy to have my involvement in the early part of the year 2000 and beyond are now unhappy that I am speaking in a way that they think favors Team Unity government. So it comes and goes. And I say this to you, ma'am. This is a Caribbean community that I love dearly. I have visited most, if not all, of the islands. I love this region. This region is my home. I have committed myself to a course of work that means that I will have to engage with the politics of this region, good or bad. And I plan to continue doing so. Guyana is no exception. If it is, the time comes, that I decide to change professions, then so be it. But for now, I think it's important that in the same way that I would have spoken to concerns about the PPP civic regime in the past, that I speak to concerns about what's going on now, because I think it is wrong, I think it is unfair. Many people from outside the world are spewing PPP's narrative. The appeal court has decided, so I don't know why so many people are disregarding it. I love Ms. Motley, but I think she has taken a side, which should not have happened. She should have been neutral. Well, you know, it's funny, because one would assume that neutrality means saying, let the voters decide and let every vote count, which sounds to me pretty much like what Prime Minister Motley and Dr. Ralph Gonzalez, the incoming chairman, are saying. Let the voters decide and let every vote count. That is neutrality. That is the role of an arbiter, to say, let us decide on the rules of the game. And the rules of the game were simple. The leaders came together and said, we will have a recount. We will find out how many votes were cast for each, and the person that has the most votes should be declared the winner. Simple. If there are questions as to validity of votes, this should be decided by an election petition. That is consistent with the constitutional rules of Guyana. I don't see where taking a side in this issue is concerned. I don't get it. I'm concerned that black people in Guyana will be oppressed again. Well, you know what? My argument was that black people in Guyana, if you believe that your oppression relies on the victory of the APNU AFC coalition, the APNU AFC coalition should have handled the business better. And I was one of the people who was saying from the very beginning that I thought that the President Granger handled his business badly. It's the same thing with Dems. If you're going to come to me and say, no, gosh, you're going to be in the wilderness for all this 20 years, you should have been thinking about that when you were in government. Because there were ways and means to handle your business that you would not be in this situation today. Because this was almost predictable. Peter, you don't know what a spoil vote is. Spoil vote is when you make a mistake on ballot papers. Yeah, right. Okay, so I don't know about spoil votes. Peter, I don't think you understand what's going on in Guyana. Guyana is a different place from the rest of the Caribbean. It has a system that you will never understand, bro. You have to go to North Korea and talk. Let Guyana deal with their own affairs. Dear Mr. Wickham, Guyana has had a democratic election or a democratic government. I've been observing politics from time when I was a girl, and I'm an old woman. No. I don't like the tone of Guyanese WhatsApps. I almost sense a threat, and I remember the guy who called you on air a few months back. How could I forget that individual? Peter, the most honorable Anthony Gabby Carter attempted to throw Admiral Nelson in the sea already. It happened at night at the Calypso final. So listening to him on Tuesday with you, I was not surprised. Now, when that incident occurred, from what I remember, it was at either at the stadium or it was at the gymnasium when Gabby went after Admiral. So there wasn't a throwing of Admiral in the sea. I remember Admiral took some lashes, some warm lashes, and his shirt was torn in the process. Incident. I think that Admiral aggravated Gabby by telling him something, which was some level of provocation. The two individuals, I understand, are still good friends, and they have mended fences. I don't know whether Admiral gave him another shirt, but Gabby and Admiral are as good can be. Because they understand that in this business, they will always be colleagues. Another WhatsApp message to read for you. Right, this one is telling me that Dennis took the wrong shot at the lady. I didn't hear that one. Right, so then someone else is saying that we need to have Guyana's election set aside and have a new one. And they're saying that there should be non-national observers to play a more significant role. Now, this is an interesting suggestion. If you're going to have a new election, who's going to supervise it? Are you going to get Mingo and Lowenfield to supervise this election when they have clearly taken a side? They supervised the last one, and by their own admission, they didn't do a particularly good job. So who's going to supervise the new one, or who will lead until the new one is instituted? One of the concerns they have is this bloated voters list. And to get this new voters list, which they said has to be based on house-to-house registration, you appreciate that that will probably take you the better part of 5 years. Bearing in mind, a lot of Guyanese live in remote areas. We're not talking about Region 4, which is Georgetown. A number of people in Region 1 and so on, in the Rupununis and areas like that, are not easily accessible. So to do house-to-house registration can be time-consuming. And I suspect that it will take a while. The question of non-national observers playing a more significant role is interesting, because what has happened recently is that Guyana does have an electoral system that has entrenched a role for observers who are not necessarily Guyanese. So we have observers from America who we are told are being biased. We have observers from Great Britain who we are told are being biased. We have observers from Canada who we are told are being biased. We have observers from CARICOM, and we are told that they're being biased. We even have an analyst from Barbados who we are told now is biased. So if we come to a situation where we say, let's have another election in Guyana, and for the avoidance of doubt, let's ensure that there are completely objective people. Where are we going to find these objective people? Is Mingo and Lowenfield, are Mingo and Lowenfield objective? Who are the objective people, and where are they going to come from? Certainly, I would like to think that if they came from third countries, we would have a problem where people are going to be saying that they also need to mind their own business. Because remember, in this business, you are objective up until I say something that is not consistent with your party line. And sadly, in politics, somebody has to win and somebody has to lose. And the losers will always conclude that the reason that they have lost is because somebody who was objective was biased. If they were supporting them, they weren't biased. But if they were opposed to them, they were biased. Good morning, Peter. Can you find out what's going on with Fair Trading Commission? I've been calling and I'm not getting through. I'm not sure what's happening at Fair Trading Commission. A few government agencies have been having some challenges with their telephone lines this week. I don't know what is going on with the service providers. We're having a similar situation here now, as we said, where our telephone lines have been given some trouble, which really leaves us to wonder whether we're having a slightly more global problem in terms of what's going on in Barbados. And that's the reason why you're not getting through on the telephone to Fair Trading Commission. Well wishes to Mr. Johnson. Good morning, Peter. I want to wish Dennis Johnson well, and I want to join in that in wishing Dennis Johnson well. We certainly need to have Dennis on the program and interacting more regularly, so we do wish Dennis well. Peter, that Trinidad lady upset Dennis. She does get me upset also. Yes, Peter, it is her. I would really love for the Trinidadian lady to call a chat with me when the phone start working again so that she and I can discuss some of these issues which are causing her anguish, because she would upset me, but, you know, she wouldn't, Somebody was asking if Ronnie could play some music, and they're asking his perspective on Nelson. I think he had spoken in relation to all of those things. The next message I have here, praying for Dennis's recovery. He's a great moderator. Sending lots of love, Dennis. Dennis, you're getting love from all over the region. And I have a referral here to a WhatsApp message which guides me to a Starbrook News article from the 22nd of June, where the individual who is, I believe he's Dominic Gaskin, who is son-in-law of David Granger, was raising concerns about the tabulation for Region 4. For many of us, the issue of what exactly was the tabulation for Region 4, I think, is the key to all of this. Because even after we establish that there needs to be concern over fiddle votes, we still have to ask ourselves, what exactly was the declaration for Region 4 initially? Where were the statement of polls? Where did that information come from? Because certainly that was where this issue started. Well, we're going to make a try. The technical gurus are here. The director of programming, who is Ronnie, who was with you for the last couple of minutes. Ronnie tells me that we can make a stab at it, and let's see if we can get some calls in. I have a WhatsApp here that I need to read, and we'll just see if in the meantime we can get some people calling. So try calling us on 434-1790. We'll see if we can have a conversation with you. Lester writes, Peter, please explain the difference between Guyana's electoral system and ours. Secondly, can you please explain how Granger can be declared the winner? I just joined the program, not sure if you explained these issues before. And this is a WhatsApp message coming from Lester. And to just tell you, Lester, that the challenge of Guyana's electoral system is that they're the only people that have moved towards proportional representation. So in short, they vote for party while we vote for a representative. Because of the fact that they vote for party, it is impossible to declare representatives along the way that make up the seats in parliament as we would in Barbados. So in the case of Guyana, everything is heavily dependent on constituency or regional declarations being made. Let's say village declarations or regional declarations or electoral district declarations being made and being communicated to Georgetown. The challenge in all of this basically is that it would appear as though the declarations that have been made in particular regions have been communicated to Georgetown, and it seems as though the information that has been received in Georgetown as reflected in the statement of polls, there is an inconsistency between what the parties would have recorded at their location in the regions and what Georgetown is declaring was received by them based on what Mingo was being said. Of course, there's a whole issue as to whether or not his stuff was authentic, but be that as it may, that is the general outlay. As a result of that, now we have gone to several stages where the court has told Mingo to produce a statement of polls and make the calculation. He has done that and he's come to a different conclusion. The parties agreed to a recount. That has been done, and we are told that the recount confirmed that what was in the boxes was consistent with what the statement of polls from the PPP Civic was saying. We are now being told that the reason that the statement of polls for the PPP Civic is showing that is because there are over 100,000 votes that are invalid, and that the chief elections officer has to have the right to declare those votes without reference to anyone else. And naturally, a lot of us have some challenges with that, including the 115,000 people in Guyana who are being disenfranchised immediately. But anyhow, so that's the situation there. Their system is slightly different to ours because it has proportional representation. But you know what I've been saying in all of this? One of the commonalities between election systems, whether it be here, whether it be in the UK, whether it be in France or Germany, we generally have a situation where if you get more votes than the other person, you win. And that is the simple principle that we hold to globally where elections are concerned. And it makes it as easy for you as an analyst to compare, or for me as an analyst, to compare elections one versus the other. Because ultimately, once you have a majority vote, you basically have a victor. We have a plurality, you have a victor. And we're seeing here a situation where we're being told, yes, there's a plurality, but we are also not having a victor simply because the individual votes that are in there are not votes that are supposed to be there. And while the challenge generally comes via an election petition where the court hears evidence as to why those votes should be or shouldn't be, we're being told that it is better in this instance to just let one person take them out. Peter, I sent you an email previously when you hosted Brass Tacks on Monday, June 1st. With all the talk of bonds on the BOSS program, I'm concerned that former CLICO policy holders have been forgotten. During the payout of money in 2019, when Prime Minister and Minister Strawn were leading liquidation of CLICO assets, many of us were paid monies in a large lump sum of bonds. I was myself paid as much as $30,000 worth of government B-series bonds. I have to wait for 15 years for these bonds to mature, and I receive $16 in interest every 3 months. Now that Leroy Paris is back in the news, having been arrested and charged, there's really nothing that can be done to assist former policyholders who are stuck with these useless government B-series bonds. I would like to hear your thoughts on the matter, any that you may have, and this is an email from Damien. Damien, my apologies for not having read the email before. My apologies with that. Let me just say to you that I've reflected on this issue, and the challenge that you're going to have with the CLICO debt is ultimately that the CLICO debt will continue to be what it is, debt. Government has made commitments regarding the way that debt will be dissolved over time, and I understand that, unfortunately, you will probably have to wait for the 15 years to see some resolution of the matter. I myself have been touched by the CLICO issue, although clearly not as heavily as you, because I didn't have that quantity of money to invest. And I appreciate that if I do receive any part of that money, I would probably consider myself lucky. And if it happens, it will probably happen in the next 10 to 15 years. I also appreciate that investment carries some level of risk. And I think that the risk issue is pretty much what we're seeing here. Having said all of that, though, I think that we have to be very careful with the excitement surrounding the arrest and charging of Mr. Paris. I think that we have to understand that there is a difference between a civil matter and a criminal matter. And to the best of my knowledge, the civil matter has pretty much been dealt with regarding the monies that are in question. If you were able to retrieve those monies, I don't know that this criminal matter will help in that regard in terms of what has happened yesterday. So I think that we need to be careful, and I mean, the legal experts will probably be able to explain it better, but from my own limited understanding of how these things work, if I do something wrong, and I'm saying me here, not you, not anyone, because I don't want to step on anyone's toes. So if I... There are two processes that come into play. One, there is the criminal matter, where I can be charged with theft and I can be prosecuted in a court of law and I can be locked up for a period of time, or alternatively, I can be given a fine. There's a separate matter, which is a slightly more civil matter, where that individual may want to get the money back. Now, challenges, generally speaking, when someone is charged with theft, the person who is behind the charging of them, or the person who is the main protagonist, invariably will say, let us try to get the money back, because that is their main intention. So I think in this instance, the two issues have to be considered separately. The desire of policyholders to get back some of that money, even though that will not go very far towards addressing their need, they believe is a principle involved, and I support that principle. But I don't know that what happened yesterday does anything to help advance that process, because that's a criminal matter where you're saying, let's hold a person criminally liable for doing something wrong, right? So that is my take on the situation. Those are the two emails that I've received that I've been told I need to read. I understand that we have made some progress regarding the telephone lines, so we just need to receive some calls now because we don't have any calls. So you could call us at 4341-790. And with hope, if you call us on 4341-790, we'll be able to have a program that will be able to continue along the path that we have chosen. So let's see if we can get some calls coming in. Good morning, Peter. It's my understanding that the most distinguished order of St. Michael and St. George is a British order of chivalry founded in 28th April 2018 by George, Prince Regent, later King George IV, while he was acting as regent to his father, King George III. It is a present awarded to men and women who hold high office and who render extraordinary important non-military service in a foreign country, or who can be conferred for important loyal service in relation to foreign or Commonwealth affairs. If we take a careful look at the symbols and medals awarded to these individuals, we will find what appears to be a white angel standing on the neck of a black man. Against the backdrop of recent trouble in the United States of America, which is being seen across the globe, leading to marches here in Barbados, I find these symbols quite offensive. Peter, can future recipients protest against receiving medals with these symbols on them? You know, it's ironic. I had some drinks yesterday evening, socially distanced drinks, of course, with some friends. I had no idea because, of course, I've never seen the honor. I've never received one, and I've never seen anyone with one. Someone raised that very question about the fact that you have this angel, white angel, standing on the back of a black man. I've never seen it, but I've heard it said. And I continue to make the point that this Black Lives Matter movement gives us the opportunity to consider many of the things that we previously did not think about. Now, it is not for us to say it is about Nelson. It is about the stained glass windows in Parliament. It is about this national honor of St. George. It is about the knighthood. I think that where we go with this conversation depends on the energy, the interests of Barbadians that will raise issues like this. So this is a perfectly legitimate one. And I think it requires a conversation. The Prime Minister is talking about starting conversations. I think we need to have a conversation about that too, because we may want to ask ourselves whether we need to be having Knights of St. Michael and St. George, or whether we need to be having knights, period. And certainly if we're going to give them a knighthood, would the image of which he's speaking be appropriate under those circumstances? So I agree with you entirely. We're going to try to take a call. The first one for, well, since we got back on the program, let's see if we can get a call and say good morning and welcome. Good afternoon, I'm sorry, and welcome to Down to Brass Tacks.
Peace be on to you, Mr. Wickham.
Hey, afternoon, ma'am. Good to hear you.
To
so nice to hear a lady's voice to start the program. Calming, reassuring
a lady finish it. Sometimes I love her views and sometimes I don't agree, but we gotta agree to disagree.
Is he Trinidadian lady?
Yes, I love to hear her.
I would love her to call back and chat with me.
Well, I would glad if she called back too.
Yeah.
But she might not. But I am calling, I just want to say get well greetings to Mr. Johnson. And I pray God healing hand be upon him.
Mm-hmm.
I wish you much better, Mr. Johnson, and get well soon.
Okay.
And that is what I call for. I send you the WhatsApp, and you reading the negative things that the guy is speaking about my country and my prime minister. Everybody is playing our business too.
I read some of your ones about Dennis. I didn't read yours, but I probably didn't get to it yet.
Right. So I had to call him because I'm concerned about Mr. Johnson.
Okay.
Don't mind me. We agree to disagree too, but that's my boy.
Yeah. I certainly want to join you in that regard.
You a lot better. Pardon me?
Yeah. I want to join you in that regard. I tried to locate him on the premises unsuccessfully, but you know, we give you an update as soon as.
Well, yes, because all of us want to know, and everybody's concerned. Yeah. So.
Just remember that, Dennis.
And as much as we might not agree with people, we still
but then the love is still there.
We have to show love.
Yeah. Just remember that Dennis has been
Bless everybody, stay safe.
Just remember, ma'am, that Dennis has been a soldier fighting in this battle in the vineyard of health for a long time.
He's hardened
that regard, and I'm confident that in the same way that he was able to deal with the other issues, he will deal with this one. And he always comes back. Fit as a fiddle, so he should be all right.
Am also.
You are also.
I have sandwiches. I bought myself a trade.
Oh, there. Okay.
Other things, I was just fighting. About this is about my fifth year now. I was fighting. Mm-hmm. The doctor said it was cancer, but prayers. I know prayers be tall.
Mm-hmm.
And I going through my have challenges too. So.
You were able to cope and live as reasonably
every day,
as possible?
One day at a time, and I thank God every day. Mm-hmm. Because, as you know, a lot of us get up and we don't even say, well, Lord, I thank you for the day. But, mm-hmm. you know, I can say trials and, you know, experiences show us to be brave and to give God thanks every day of your life. I sent a quote there for my boy this morning,
mm-hmm.
which, my boy Ronnie Clark said that the gentleman didn't believe in God. He said, that which does not kill us makes us stronger.
Yeah.
That is my quote for today.
Okay.
All right
ma'am. Thanks. Good to hear from you. And I'm happy that you were our first call back out.